Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I am going to give you the latest on this virus. I've been doing a lot of research on it. As you know, I've been putting out quite a bit of shows on it, talking to different experts, and today is no different. I have a journalist from China that's going to be joining the show later. He's the medical director, the e-medical director in China, so he works with a lot of people on the ground there, including in Wuhan, in the Wuhan province. And he also has been a war and medical journalist for many years and an activist, and he was on the delegation with me. So I got to know him, and I got him to come on to the show. But first, I'm going to talk about what the latest numbers are, and then I'm going to give you kind of a precursor as to his what he's about, so that you'll understand. Because I think it's going to be a little bit of a culture shock to many of my listeners. He comes from a really different perspective, and that's part of understanding the Chinese. They come from a completely different paradigm. And so when he's talking, he's going to be talking from a completely different paradigm. And I want to kind of set you up for that. But let's get into the current numbers now. The confirmed cases, which I want to tell you, this is really low because they don't have enough testing supplies. A lot of people just haven't been tested. So the confirmed cases as of January 29th is 6,154 and 132 deaths. And the virus has spread to at least 19 countries as of January 27th and probably more. Again, people have this virus for 10 to 14 days that while it incubates. So many people have it. We just don't know. The University of Hong Kong suggested that the outbreak would not peak until April and that the real number of cases could already be past 40,000. And the Imperial College of London, this was done by Neil Ferguson from their British Infectious Disease Unit. He's a specialist there. He estimated that 100,000 people could already be infected with this. Okay, well, now let's talk about China and what they're doing. I mean, this is completely unprecedented in the world. China has never done this either, as far as a complete lockdown of a whole province, which is a huge region. It's 56 million people that are in complete lockdown. And let me tell you what that means across their country. Most large centers in the country, all sports venues, theaters, museums, tourist attractions, all locations that attract crowds have been closed. All schools are closed. All group tours have been canceled. And not only the city of Wuhan, but virtually the entire province of Hubei has been locked down. And I'm not pronouncing that right. Hubei. And all their trains, their aircrafts, their buses, their subways, their ferries are grounded, and all major highways and toll booths are closed. Thousands of flights and train trips have been canceled until further notice. Some cities like Shanghai and Beijing, who are not in complete lockdown, they're conducting temperature tests on all roadways leading into the cities. Because the disease is spreading so much quicker than they anticipated, you know, it's spreading faster than the SARS virus and faster than the coronavirus typically does. That's why we're saying there's something quite weird about this. They are building two temporary portable hospitals now in Wuhan, and one of them will be approximately 25,000 square meters. I don't know how large the second one will be. I think the second one's even going to be larger, because that first one was going to house about 1,000 beds, and the second one's going to be about 1,600 beds. And Wuhan has also asked citizens to neither leave or enter the city without a compelling reason. They all are expected to wear face masks, and a blockade is set up. This is like closing down everything in a city that's five times the size of Chicago 2 days before Christmas. I mean, this is just absolutely incredible what they're doing. The hospitals are in short supply, so they're working with their factories to get them to full capacity to bring in more supplies, because they just don't have them for the patients in the hospitals. If you look at the different videos that are popping up, they have people laying in the hallways. They just can't take all these patients. The last report that I did showed that 32,000 people were admitted just on Monday in the Wuhan, that whole region. and each day it's more. That was reported on state media. It was called Chinese News, their state media. They haven't reported it since. I'm expecting that's a growing number, and they just haven't put out a new number. Now, this is from The Lancet. It's a weekly peer-reviewed general medical journal. It's one of the most oldest and most prestigious and well-known medical journals in the world. And they studied the Wuhan virus from January 1st to January 20th. These were confirmed cases. They studied 99 confirmed cases. It's not a large enough sample size for this to be an absolute study, but it's a good indicator of what is happening. They followed up on these cases up until January 25th, and this was just released today as of January 29th. They have, out of 99 patients, 49% had exposure to the Hunan seafood market. The average age of the patients was 55.5 years, and there were 67 men and 32 women. For some reason, they're saying that men are more susceptible to getting this virus than women. They're saying that females' hormones are keeping us from getting this virus. That just means that men even more need to be looking at building up their immunities. They, of the people that were infected, 51% of them had chronic diseases. The manifestations of the disease included fever, which was 83% of the patients, 82% had coughs, 31% had shortness of breath, 11% had muscle ache, 9% had confusion, 8% had headaches, 5% had sore throats, 4% had diarrhea, no, I'm sorry, 2% had diarrhea, and 2% had chest pain, and 1% had nausea and vomiting. That means that 17% of the patients did not have a fever. So some of these patients, or some of the people who have the disease, are not showing many symptoms. Of the 99 patients, 11% of them died and 31% were discharged. 23% were put into intensive care. And this is the bigger number here. 58% of those patients still remain in the hospital. So more of those people could die. So the death percentage could go up, especially those that are still in intensive care. So if 58% are still in the hospital and 11% of the patients died, I mean, that could likely go up to over 20%. I mean, who knows? This is still early and trying to figure out what the real deal is. The bigger question is, what is the infection rate? The Lancet also did a smaller study amongst a family cluster, and they did not get the disease from the Hunan seafood market. So likely it was a second round infection. The study showed that 83% infection rate. Now, it was a really small sample size. So to know what the true infection rate is, we have to look at a much larger, but this is pointing to what it could be and why it's spreading so quickly. I'm going to have both of these studies up on my website at sarahwestall.com, and you can look at these. Like I said, this is the best we have right now, and we just have to keep getting you information as it comes in. President Xi Jinping has ordered the Chinese military to keep its mission firmly in mind and shoulder the responsibility to make contribution to winning the battle against the novel coronavirus epidemic. He made a firm plea to the military to stay on task. So they just want to make sure nobody panics. And from what I'm being told from experts, the number one thing is to keep people from panicking. And that's why they keep the news hidden and secret, and they don't tell you everything to keep people from panicking. And for people like me, that makes me angry. I want to know the truth. I mean, I can see why they would keep it to a certain degree, because if people panic and there's a whole widespread anarchy, then they're not going to be able to take care of the sick. But I mean, to hide the truth is also, if you hide the truth, then you're going to lose the trust of the people, and that's going to create anarchy as well. So there's that fine balance. Like we have in the United States, they have lied to so many people for so long that it's creating the civil unrest that we're seeing, because nobody trusts the institutions. And so if you get to a point where you don't trust the institutions, it becomes a major issue. And so that's a dangerous road tight walk, you know, it's a dangerous road to go down to not share with your people just to make sure there isn't anarchy, but I completely understand it. Okay, let's get back to the numbers that have been quarantined. 56 million people have been quarantined, and that's just an amazing amount. It's never happened in history where any country or anybody has been quarantined to this total lockdown. People have expressed a sense of awe about the boldness of the quarantine. Experts have reached out, people who are experts in infectious diseases and in society management are just in awe over this. The New York Times quoted Dr. William Schaffner as saying, he's from the Vanderbilt University, as saying that this complete lockdown is really a public health experiment because the scale of which it's just never been done. And he was really astonished by it. Logistically, it's stunning. And it was done so quickly. I don't think there's any other country in the world probably that could have pulled it off except the Chinese, maybe North Korea, because they have so much control over their people. I doubt they could do that in the United States. I'm just being honest here. And according to the China Media Project, they are pretty frustrated. And this is an example of what I was saying, that you have to be careful about losing the trust of your people. They were saying that the early suppression of news about the epidemic is now fairly common knowledge amongst the Chinese. So the Chinese people know that they've been suppressing the news. And many people view this failure to grapple openly with the outbreak as the chief reason why it was later seen as necessary to take the dramatic action of closing down my city and many others, they're saying. This is a direct quote from the China Media Project. And I got to tell you, it's hard to find real numbers and real information as people have been seeing. So I've been digging for this. I've been looking up China media. I've been talking to sources in China. And so this is what I've come up with. The National Health Commissioner, Mao, I can't pronounce their names. I'm really sorry. It's Mao, X-I-A-O-W-E-I, said on Sunday that unlike SARS, the coronavirus was contagious even in an incubation stage that could last up to 14 days, which is what I said earlier. Ma added that some infected with the virus may not show any symptoms and further risks from the virus, potentially mutations, remain unknown. And that's what that study from The Lancet is showing, that up to 17% may not have any symptoms. At the present rate of development of the epidemic is accelerating, she says. Ma said, I'm afraid that it will continue for some time and the number of cases may increase. And the United States Secretary of State Mike Pompeo talked to today, January 29th, on the phone with a member of the political bureau of the Communist Party, the Central Committee. His name is Yang Jiechi, J-I-E-C-H-I. And they talked on phone and they later request discussing efforts to combat the novel coronavirus epidemic. So apparently the United States is offering help. The World Health Organization, WHO, is having an emergency committee meeting tomorrow, which would be Thursday the 30th, to reconsider its decision to not declare a global public health emergency over the spread that is deeply concerning, they say. New cases keep emerging, and agency officials announced this on Wednesday that they could change it, and they probably will change it, to a global public health emergency because it's, like I said, it's hit at least 19 countries at this point. They've also said that at least six cases where the infected individual had not traveled to China have emerged. That means that it's secondary cases outside of China, which means that it's spreading, you know, from the Chinese to elsewhere. And that's why they're starting to be concerned. I think they should have been concerned earlier than this, but it is what it is. The WHO decision on whether outbreak not constitute a global public health emergency is expected to be announced on Thursday evening in Geneva following the emergency committee's meeting. Okay. This is from the Hong Kong news media, and they reported that Michael Osterholm, he's the director of Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, said it's really difficult to predict the peak, but he expected the epidemic to be worse than SARS. So he's another one that's saying the same thing. He says it's going to be a much larger outbreak than SARS. And if the Lancet study is at all likely, you know, the 83% contagion, that it could be really, really serious. Another scholar at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security agreed with his statements and saying that it's spreading faster between humans than the SARS virus. And the outbreak has a potential to be bigger in terms of case counts, clearly, just based on what we're seeing. It just remains to be seen what the severity level of the outbreak will be and what the ratio of mild cases to severe cases will be. But if the Lancet study is anything, it could be pretty dire here. The first indications are not good. Let's see what else I have here before I get into my interview. Okay, the last thing that I want to say is an announcement came after WHO, the Director General, General Tedros Adhanom, it starts with a G, met with the Chinese leaders in Beijing earlier today. So this was on Wednesday, the 29th. And he stated that stopping the spread of this virus, both in China and globally, is WHO's highest priority at this moment. And he's saying he's appreciating China's serious attitude towards the epidemic, and especially the commitment from the top leaders and the transparency demonstrated, including sharing data and genetic sequencing of the virus. So, of course, it's important to share the data so that other experts can figure out what's going on with this virus. Other people are saying they haven't been transparent. And, you know, what leaders do is they tell them, they thank them for what they want them to do, not for what they've done. And so you don't know. But that's something you got to look out for. So you don't know if it really happened or if he's just thanking them for what he wants to have happened. It's just a trick they use to get them to do things. Okay, so let's talk about my interview with Shi Xin Li. Like I said, he's the director of the eMedical Institute that he is forming. And he's also a journalist. He's a past war correspondent and a journalist on medical issues and an activist with creating friendly relationships between China and the United States. And he is very pro-China. It's where he grew up in Hong Kong. He's Chinese. He loves his country. And what I saw with this interview was him protecting the Chinese from what they're doing is good. And he really believes that. And it is interesting because it's almost shocking, because what he's saying is that this virus isn't that bad. And so what he's doing is he's trying to compare it to the flu virus and how we don't really do much with the flu virus. We just try to give people vaccines. And you know what happens with vaccines. We had 26 million people last year get the flu. Of the 26 million people, and I don't think people are aware of this, 80,000 people died last year of the flu. And that's pretty shocking that that's many people died. That's 8% of our population ended up getting the flu, but it's only a 0.02% death rate and ends up being 80,000 people. I mean, it's still really, really bad. I mean, 0.02% is really bad, but we're talking right now with this virus being at 11%. And he argues that once these healthy people and all these numbers come in, the virus, the actual death toll will probably be closer to 1% to 2%. But if you're comparing 1% to 2% to 0.02% death rate, you know, 80,000 people, and that's 0.02 compared to 1% or 2%, that's like the Spanish flu. That's where we're talking millions and millions and millions of people dying, not like what the flu does here. Now, what the flu does here is absolutely ridiculous. And he's right. We don't do what we should for our country to take care of things. And he has a point there. And so we talk about that. And then he talks about the fact that people are very controlled and it's calm. Now, you got to understand, he's talking to medical workers in Wuhan, and they're trained to be very calm. My sister, I watched her. I was so proud of her. When she was dealing with a sick patient, we were in a theater and somebody collapsed and she went to help him. It was like she transformed into a different, wasn't my goofy sister I grew up with and we fought all the time. It was a complete professional that transformed into somebody very calm, very soothing. Everybody respected her immediately and she took over the situation. And so these are the people that he's dealing with. So these people are trained to be calm, to know to calm everyone down and to communicate that. So that's what he's communicating. And that's how he's behaving, because that's how they're trained to behave. They're trained to do it in our country. They're trained to do it in hospitals. They're trained to do it there. So that's what he's communicating when they're saying everybody's calm, everything's under control, because that's how they act and that's how they treat everything. I don't know if it is or not, because when you look at some of these videos, you can see the panic in people's eyes. But if the people, the professionals are panicked, then everybody else will panic. And when you're talking about these kind of death rates and this kind of situation, you have to be in control and not be panicking. Otherwise, you're going to see much higher death rates. So that's where he's coming from. And then he talks about the racism. And he is right. He forwarded me some articles coming out of different places in Asia, Singapore and different. Now, my listeners, me and other people that I talk to, you know, I've been talking to Phil and Max, you know, Dr. Phil and Max, who's, I don't know if Max is a doctor. He sure has enough letters after his name. He does not like to tell people what his credentials are, but I think he has the most credentials of everyone that I've been talking to. And then Dr. Joe, who's a toxicologist, very impressive. None of us are racist. We just want to save as many lives as possible. Sherry Edwards, she doesn't care what you are. We don't even want to know what you are. All we care about is, are you more at risk? Then we care because we want to help you build up your immunities. We don't care though, how much pigment you have in your skin or what place you come from. We just care about saving lives and to get this information out there. But he is right that there's racism out there because he forwarded me a thing from Singapore. And instead of caring about these people, and it's not just Singapore, it's multiple countries doing this, caring about the Chinese, they start bashing them about their eating habits and start making fun of them and all these things. And I was appalled reading some of these articles. So he is right. There is this undertone. But, you know, I'd like to think that we're above that and that that's not what we're about. But this is the connotation that he deals with and where he's coming from. So when you listen to him and he's a little defensive on that, he's forwarding me these articles and he is right that that's what it's from. Now, the last thing is he loves his country and he has friends that are on the right and on the left. And I got to meet some of the friends that are on the right because I really enjoyed talking to them because I think they think a little bit more like I do. And I don't really think I'm on the right. I think I'm more in the middle. But in this today's world, I guess I've been defined on the right. So whatever that means, whatever. I don't know. And I've told people that always thought they were on the left and they started sharing their opinions. And I'll confront them and say, you know, that that's really on the right now. And they'll just laugh because it really is. It's funny. It's not funny, but it kind of, you mean, you have to laugh about some of these things. But my point is that he's going to be presenting it from a paradigm that none of us are used to. China has notoriously been a very closed society. We're just starting to learn about their culture and it is very different than ours. So his perspective is different than ours. So instead of judging them and being culturally shocked and writing them off, I invite you to listen to him and to learn kind of their different perspective. I'm not telling you that we need to, and I don't want to take on a communist perspective. And I hope you don't. I don't want to be a communist country, but I think it's important so that we don't go to war with these people and we can learn how to work with these people and other people around the world that we don't get so defensive that we won't even listen to what they have to say. And all we're going to be is tribal and fighting with each other. I think we can keep our values, keep what our culture is and still acknowledge what other people are. That's why I brought him onto this program. Plus, he has information on what's really going on. I want to bring him on later as this grows and spreads so I can get the truth on what's really going on. Because at this point, nobody really knows. I'm giving you the best information I can find. But once all this starts coming out, he's going to share it. And that's what I want to know. Because at this point, everybody's pretty guarded because they don't want to give you wrong information. They also don't want to sensationalize and cause people to panic. Because I got to tell you, some of these shows and some of the people I'm talking to, it is kind of creating a panic. It's important that we don't create a panic. If you listen to how they covered the czars back in the day, people were panicking. Well, this could be a lot worse than the czars epidemic because of how much they're locking everything down. And it's just like, holy crap, I've never seen anything like this. So yeah, there is a reason to go and to question and put your red flags up. But at the same time, they are right. Don't panic. Just be smart. Do smart things like the C60 I keep sharing. And I don't care what people say to me about it being, I'm just being taking advantage of the situation because I am not. Sharing this information is one of the most important thing I can do about the C60. Because like Dr. Joe said, he's like, this builds up your immunities, you're finding by 70%. if there is one thing that you can do to help your loved ones and yourself, it's to build up your immunities. And that's by eating right, eating the vitamins that you need to eat. And that's through, you know, healthy fruits and vegetables and good food, looking at the different supplements that you can take that helps to build up your immunities. Ginger, and I drink green ginger tea every single night. And there's other things, colloidal silver. And, you know, there's so many good products that you can look into. Vitamin C, I think there's like 10 different things if you search on it on YouTube, or I'm sorry, if you search on it on DuckDuckGo, you can find like a list of 10 of the best things to build up your immunities. What they don't list is C60, and that's number one. I'm telling you, number one by far. So let's get into this interview with Shuhin Lee. And it's going to be a two-parter, because I'm finding that when I split these shows up into two parts, and other people are doing this too, is the censorship isn't as bad, because you'll find us on one of the shows and we end up getting out to more people. So that's why I'm doing it. Also because it's easier for me, because it takes so much time to do a long show in one big chunk. But so now it's good on both fronts. So let's get into this important interview with Shuhin Lee.